This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Illinois Wesleyan University sociology professor Megan Burke interviewed Tea Party members and organizers all over the state of Illinois in an effort to gain greater understanding about their movement. She's written a book about what she learned through those conversations. Megan Burke is a 1998 graduate of Penfield High School and the author of Race, Gender, and Class in the Tea Party. Megan Burke, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why did you decide you wanted to write a book about the Tea Party?
Well, I study the way that people talk and think about race and how that shapes movements and local outcomes. So when the Tea Party first kind of came into the public stage and was starting to get some criticism for the way that they were talking about and in some cases representing different racial groups and issues in sort of racialized ways, I thought, well, gosh, this is what I do. I can't ignore it. And so I just dove in and tried to figure out what I could learn.
How did you find people to interview, and how many do you think you interviewed for the book?
So for the book, my strategy was to focus not just sort of on Tea Party supporters. There was a lot of research that was already being done, everything from like sort of Pew research, kind of broad attitudinal polls about people who were sympathetic to the Tea Party. I thought, you know, I really want to know what's motivating the people who are the real active folks in their community, sort of the key organizers in their local area, who are devoting their time and their energy and their money to supporting the Tea Party. And so in the end, I talked to about 25 organizers. I kept it confined just to the state of Illinois because I knew that practically I couldn't have that kind of reach all over the country. And I was interested in that question of how it shapes local outcomes. So I talked to 25 people in the state who were really willing to talk to me. I wasn't quite sure how that would go, but I think they feel so misrepresented in the media, and they feel so misunderstood. The movement was also pretty new at that period of time. This was around 2010, 2011, and they were hungry to be heard. And so I contacted folks who were the organizers in their area using websites and eventually referrals. And I feel like I got a really comprehensive reach into the key people just in this one state.
You tell us in this book that you have a somewhat different political view than the Tea Party members that you interviewed. Do you think now you have a better understanding of why they see the world the way they do?
Absolutely. And so just to say, you know, I didn't lead out of the gates with, hey, I'm liberal, you're conservative, let's talk. But they knew the kind of question I was interested in. And I didn't at all hide my politics. In fact, sometimes since I conducted interviews, I was regularly sitting down at people's kitchen tables or we'd meet in a coffee shop and I was interviewing them, but we really had conversations, especially when they asked. I was very honest about my often differing perspective, but what I was able to see through having those conversations, and this is really where I think there's a lot of value that can be added with this type of research that the polling data can't quite get a handle on, is that there are these potential coalitions. There's these common concerns that we all, you know, many of us tend to have in this country that there are differing political answers to. But I was able to see a lot more commonalities than I had expected.
What do you think surprised you most that you learned in these interviews? Is there one thing you can point to that caught you by surprise when you heard it perhaps once or maybe even several times?
Yeah, you know, there were a couple things. And that's where, you know, I devote I'm glad that I got to write a book instead of just an article about this because I wade into a lot of that in the book. One of them is definitely just how many women are finding their political voice and their political confidence in this movement. You know, it sounds like an overstatement, and I don't want to sell it too much because there's a lot of great men who are devoting their energies to this movement as well. But I really began to think of it as a women's movement. And hearing the way that women talked about these concerns affecting their families and sort of the way that they thought that their gender was able to shape their perspective and their work was really fascinating to me. I devote an entire chapter to that in the book. The other thing that surprised me was that there are a lot of critiques of, the amount of money in politics, you know, folks not feeling like they're represented. And a lot of times people were saying things about, you know, really feeling like we've gotten away from a democracy in this country that I found myself really agreeing with. And I wasn't sure I was going to agree with them about anything when we got started.
Sticking with that topic of gender in the Tea Party movement for a moment, Did you find that the women who were organizers and leaders of the Tea Party movement had some different motivations for being involved than the men that you talked to?
The way that they framed it, yes. You know, I think that women and men actually share a lot more concerns than we, you know, we have this sort of like, you know, women are from Venus, men are from Mars sort of perspective that wants to say that we're all so different, that women are the ones that care about their family and their grandchildren. You know, I think that men really do as well, but the women in the movement were really able to tap that as a source of political legitimacy that allowed them to stand up and be heard when they said, listen, I'm worried about my kids. I'm worried about my grandkids. There's a way that that carries some more weight for women and allows the entry into a space that allows them then to also gain other kinds of political empowerment. And I thought that that was a really important thing to understand about this movement.
The subtitle of your book is What the Movement Reflects About Mainstream Ideologies.
That's right.
Yeah. How closely related is the Tea Party to what we would consider the mainstream of American political thought?
Much more so than I think anyone may expect. So I think that we have such a partisan, deeply divided sort of framework in this country that we imagine that the left and the right are so entirely different. And there are differences, and those differences matter. You know, again, many of us have political perspectives that do deeply vary from one another. You know, I'm still not a Tea Party supporter personally, but, you know, I think that they were getting a lot of heat for being this sort of radical, sort of fringe sort of movement. Some of their strategies and some of the things that they're proposing politically are quite far right. But in terms of their thinking about race, in terms of even their thinking about gender, even though I'm saying that this is a vehicle for empowerment for women, and the way that they're thinking about politics and money and democracy, all tracked much closer to the middle, the mainstream in this country, than to sort of the fringes.
Is there some sort of connection in a strange way between what the Tea Party has been talking about, at least in some Tea Party groups, and what the Occupy movement was really talking about at the time when maybe it had its most, got the most attention in terms of the corrupting power of money on the system and sort of the inequity of how things work out for, especially for people in the middle class?
That's exactly right. And that's just what I mean where I say, although the Occupy movement and the Tea Party definitely propose very different sort of policy suggestions, their recognition of the problems are quite similar. So, you know, both are really recognizing how the middle class is being hurt in this country and how few opportunities really seem to be there for young folks, right? Going to college and taking on all this debt for what sort of jobs and possibilities and how hard people are struggling to make ends meet, you know, is something that's really commonly felt, I think, in both groups. Another thing is being very critical of how much money influences our political system as opposed to the real voices of people on the ground who are struggling. You know, one example of that I always bring up that was most striking to me was, you know, sitting at the kitchen table with this farming couple here in a rural town in Illinois, and they're talking about how they had known this man for years, had gone to church with him for 30 years, well-respected person in the community, someone who should be enjoying his retirement, and instead is working as a greeter at Walmart. And again, you know, that's work is noble, and that's not to diminish that kind of occupation, but they were saying, you know, this is a man who should be enjoying his retirement. Isn't it heartbreaking that he finds himself having to work as a greeter at Walmart instead? And, you know, I very sincerely said, yes, absolutely. You know, so I think we're concerned about the same things. The question then just becomes, how do we solve these problems? And what political party presents viable answers and answers that resonate with people and make sense?
In that sense, is there some tension then between maybe the Tea Party ideal, which is often talked about, of very limited government,
right,
and the desire to do something to improve the life of that man who is spending his retirement years as a greeter at Walmart?
Oh, absolutely. And this is where, you know, I think we get into these differing political strategies and conversations and policy questions and all those sorts of things that ultimately make us elect to spend our time in one political party or movement or another. And, you know, there's lots of folks who will say, well, gosh, isn't it then irrational then that the Tea Party supports political project that would only further exacerbate these problems, right? And I think that that's a fair critique. What I think becomes unfair is when we say, well, gosh, these people must be delusional, right? Don't they know that they're supporting a party that will only harm them? Doesn't that make them irrational and crazy? And I think if we look instead at the basis of where they're coming from, even though I'm quite critical of the Tea Party in terms of the way that they racially code some of these issues and things like that, you know, they're still coming from a really real place. And were we better able to acknowledge that in this country and work with what's really in front of us rather than kind of working through these political blinders, I think there's still some hope that we could come together to solve these very real problems in our country.
Speaking of race, chapter 3 of the book is called Tea Party Racism is American Racism. Explain what you mean by that.
So what I mean by that is that although the Tea Party very rightly got a lot of heat and criticism for some very racially charged posters at some of their demonstrations, and I agree is quite deeply racially coded in the way that they talk about, in particular, the issues of welfare, immigration, and national security. There's definitely racism there. But the racism that I saw them exhibit in their discussions with me, in their work, in their communities is not different than that of the rest of the country, including those in my first book that I studied in a really deliberately liberal, progressive, racially diverse community in Chicago, right? So you would think that these two populations would be diametrically opposed, but they are both colorblind. And so when we say colorblind, even though that sounds like a good thing and it's definitely a totally noble goal, we shouldn't be judging people by race and the color of their skin, but rather the content of their character, right? This sort of comes from Martin Luther King. So that's a noble goal. But when we say, well, we think that race doesn't matter anymore, that's colorblindness, right? So it's really not acknowledging the very real legacy of racism in our country, nor the ongoing forms of discrimination. So Tea Party, they were very colorblind, right? We don't see race. Race doesn't matter. You know, the past is the past. That's true for them. It's true for the mainstream American public. It was true in these liberal communities up in Chicago. Same thing with the way that they talk about these issues in very racially loaded ways. I'm very critical of all of this in my book, and I think they deserve that criticism. But so does the left, and so does the mainstream. It's really not all that different. In fact, I don't think it's very different at all.
But the Tea Party really had its rise right after Barack Obama became president, the first African-American president of the United States. Doesn't that bring a whole different racial dynamic to, at the very least, how their group is perceived?
I think that it can. But, you know, the research on this is really mixed. So political scientists have been looking very carefully at this question and have found really mixed data in terms of whether or not this additional racial resentment can fully explain this opposition. You know, this also happened at a time where we had this tremendous economic crash. And so people were really motivated to get angry about these questions and issues in their lives. You know, there have definitely been some really racially charged, some really racist images of Obama and some language around Obama and all that kind of stuff that deserves our attention and critique. But I didn't see strong evidence, at least in the people that I talked to and that I observed, because I also attended, you know, a lot of public events and some campaign trainings and things like that. You know, most folks instead were saying, you know, they think it's a really, really great thing that we have a black family in the White House for the first time, for example. And this can be sort of a model and something our country should be proud of. And yet are, of course, very critical of his politics. So I think that sometimes we go further than the data would suggest with that type of question.
You say that there are things that people who don't share the Tea Party's political beliefs can learn by examining the group more closely and perhaps really listening to what they're saying. What would you say are a couple things that people have missed about what the Tea Party believes and what they're trying to do?
You know, I think it's that sincerity of, you know, like so many of us are able to do, and certainly I know that this remains true in Michigan and West Michigan as well, you know, that local economies are struggling, that people are looking for jobs, that there's a lot of concern about, are folks going to be able to retire? is it worth it to go to school and get an advanced degree? Are there even jobs for that anymore? Are kids and our grandkids going to be okay? You know, I think that if we were able to appreciate those concerns and understand that this is where people are coming from, even if we totally disagree with the political solutions that are provided to those problems, then that's got to help. You know, I think that that there's a lot to learn from folks who are at least trying to stand up and say, something's wrong here, right? That we have these problems in our country and that they need answers, even if we disagree about what those answers should be or the way that they're being understood. So this is, again, where race becomes a great example. You know, folks are so convinced that, you know, these large numbers, that it's taxes that are really constraining us, that that's why we don't have the money we need in our paychecks, and that tax money is then going to, you know, lazy folks who aren't willing to work, and that gets deeply racially loaded with all sorts of myths, right? So we need to better understand those numbers. We need to better understand how the welfare system works. We need to better understand that our values do not differ across racial lines in the ways that we think that they do. So that's work to be done. But understanding that people are like, hey, we're struggling here. What's going on in this country? Those are tremendously important comments and questions.
Megan Burke, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Megan Burke is a professor of sociology at Illinois Wesleyan University. She is also the author of Race, Gender, and Class in the Tea Party, What the Movement Reflects About Mainstream Ideologies. And also, Megan Burke is a 1998 graduate of Penfield High School. Links with more information on Megan Burke's book and a longer version of this interview can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.